What's up, everybody? Welcome back. It is MMA After Hours. Michael Carlisle and Micah Frankel. Micah, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing all right. I feel like I'm just trying to catch up. Had a local boxing event last weekend. I know we pumped the social media at the end, but the YouTube is blowing up, guys. A ton of post-fight interviews. Still got a ton of pre-fight stuff going on for Knuckle Mania 3. And going to start pumping out stuff for the next local boxing event at the end of the month. So I feel like I'm just trying to catch up. I mean, the late night UFC actually just gave me a chance to watch the main card live. I know some of you had a light night, so I'm trying to catch up. How are you doing?
Well, it wasn't a light night. Now, I didn't go watch local boxing, but between Bellator and then the late night UFC, it was still a long night. Enjoyed it. I thought this will surprise you. While it wasn't perfect, I kind of enjoyed the Bellator. Overall, I thought they did a good job. The pacing, and I know that's something we talked about last week. It was what I expected it to be, so I wasn't caught off guard, but the pacing could have been a lot better. But overall, the presentation, I actually enjoyed Bellator, I'll be honest.
I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy it. I do feel like it was more of a boxing presentation. Does that kind of set with you? Bellator has not found a way to be themselves. So whoever helps with Showtime Boxing, they sent a few people that already know what they do over there. And they said, we're going to add our format into what you do for some of the background stuff, for the background shots, for how they did the countdown, kind of the behind the scenes talking to the athletes. I watched it on DVR because of being at a local box. So I'm going to be honest, I fast forward through all the nonsense. So my night was what, 40 minutes of watching Bellator? We have less than 7 minutes in the first fight. We have a 25-minute decision after that, and then we get 2.5 minutes in our main event. So with that 40 minutes of in-cage time, and that's being generous here, people. I'm not even trying to actually count the full, you know, that was only 10 minutes. That was 25 minutes. We're only looking at 35 minutes. I don't know why I still had 2 hours of full showtime. The only thing that gave us just 2 hours is the fact that Ryan Bader handles business so quickly. So to me, there's just something still flat about the pop, the wow factor of what Bellator does. I like the entrances. I liked the initial introductory that we get to the event with Big John and Marlo, but there's just something afterwards where it's falling flat. This is one of the few times where I'm kind of glad we had the TV angles. You'd love to be the live audience, but imagine being the live audience after that main event and you can't see anything in the cage because they've flown so many veterans into the cage that are all standing along the backside that you're just staring into a tunnel of darkness as they're raising Ryan Bader's hand. So I'm going to beat up on the production. But if we want to talk about the fights, I'm surprised that Ward Hamasi got as far as it did. They delivered. That was action-packed. Give those two guys credit for going out and throwing down like we know they can. Let's give Johnny Eblen credit. He is a championship-level competitor. There is some moxie there. Eblen really hadn't been tested besides Gegard Mousasi, and this was definitely tested. I didn't listen to the commentary. I thought that we had an ultra-close first three rounds. If Eblen doesn't score that beautiful right elbow knockdown in the second round, I think that the champion needs to finish a great finish to the fight in the fourth and fifth with dominating wrestling. And Ryan Bader, just too fast for Fedor, attacks the wrestling, and it was a one-sided outcome. So I just want to throw out my thoughts from the main card. How'd you feel about those three fights?
I enjoyed the fights. Again, pacing, I wasn't surprised. And first and foremost, they wanted to make sure they filled the 2 hours. They actually went long, but that's fine. The pacing wasn't surprised by, so it didn't bother me too much. I felt like the time between the opening fight and the Eblen fight was longer than the time between Eblen and Fedor and Bader. All in all, it was fine. I thought Bellator put a good foot forward overall with the production. I will say this is something that really stuck out to me at the beginning. When they do the opening shot and Mauro and Big John are like standing on the ramp and you got the screens behind them, it really looked like they were on green screen. And I'm sure it was because of the funky graphics on the big screen behind them. And they might even have some CGI stuff back there like WWE does. I'm not sure. But it actually looked like they were in front of a green screen. I'm like, oh, that's not really the look you wanted. But I thought it was a good open overall. Like I said, overall, I thought the presentation was good. Was it perfect? No. It also doesn't help when you flip over after Bellator and this is a UFC card where they don't really care how long they go. They just want to blow through these fights. And it seemed like it really highlighted the differences in the pace. Not that UFC necessarily always has that pace, but it just seemed like they realized, look, we're starting this card in the middle of the damn night. We're getting through it. So you kind of went fight to fight to fight to fight. So if you watch both, I think that was something that probably stood out. But once you got into the action, you know, you brought up the Ward fight. What a great story, you know, for him. And that just continues on. I enjoyed Tokov and Eblen quite a bit. Main event, it went about how I thought it was going to go, unfortunately. But overall, I did enjoy it. I thought the fights were good. I would have maybe done a fourth fight on the main card, but that's just me. Again, I know they had a lot of prepackaged stuff, a lot of things they wanted to do between fights, and they wanted to give themselves plenty of time to do that, and they certainly accomplished that.
You know what the funny part about you mentioning a fourth fight is? If you looked at the TV guide, they actually had the Isaev and Mowry fight listed.
Yeah.
So long ago, Paramount, Bellator, Viacom, somebody told DirecTV we're having four fights. All week, though, we knew it was only a three-fight main card that I thought was a little light. This is your big moment. I understand two title fights, one fun fight, but you really, in 2 hours, normally should be able to get four fights done. It just, again, magnifies that Bellator, well, sometimes the UFC does run slow. Bellator will find a new way to make it more even agonizingly slow, but you can't blame the fighters. The fighters are trying to get the fights done as fast as possible. You mentioned it, Brendan Ward, the adversity that he has overcome, addiction, getting his career back on path, the way he was able to adjust to the low kicks, the beautiful high kick, two knockdowns, getting the finish, a great story in himself. What did you feel about the co-main event? Johnny Eblen feels that he is the best middleweight in the world, and I felt like, and I didn't listen to the broadcast, that from what I've seen around, the narrative is that the broadcast really did try to perpetuate that to the public.
They did. And if I were him, I would say the exact same thing. The reality is, and I hate to do this, but I guess we're going to do it here, and we'll probably do it again when we talk about Ryan Bader. Where does he stand in the middleweights? He's not better than Adesanya. Not better than Whitaker, not better than Paella.
Top five in the world?
Maybe. And look, I'm not knocking him. Again, I thought he fought a hell of a fight. I don't know. I don't like comparing, well, if this guy were on that roster, where would he be? But when you're making that comparison or your company's making that comparison, I think you do got to look at it. Yeah, he's probably top five. I'd put him ahead of Sean Strickland. I'd put him ahead of Paulo Costa. I'd put him ahead of Brunson right now. I'd put him ahead of Marvin Vettori. I'm just looking at the middleweight rankings for UFC, kind of where you'd slot him in if he were there. Yeah, I think he's definitely top five. He's probably a lot closer to five than he is to one, though, at least right now.
We have the main event, and like we said, it both played out a lot more like we were expecting. The big wide hooks of Ryan Bader were kind of hitting Fedor over the top, busted Fedor's nose atop of the bridge. Then he got the takedown. And
let me ask you something.
One-way traffic.
Is Fedor's nose like the equivalent of Nate Diaz's forehead and eyebrows? Like when he steps in the cage and you just look at him hard, it's going to bust open?
It appears to be. It appears to be.
Because we were like 4 seconds in the fight and Fedor's already, his nose is cut.
Just bleeds easy. All that scar tissue, all those minutes. It was one-way traffic. Ryan Bader, 7-0 at heavyweight. 5-0 in rematches. And 2-0. The only fighter to be 2-0 against the GOAT, Fedor Emelianenko. Does this raise the stock of Fedor, of Ryan Bader? Does this put Ryan Bader further up that ladder of greatest heavyweights of all time? What do you think Ryan Bader just gained from this monumental, earth-shattering, Scott Coker can't believe it achievement?
I see, this is tough because I am a firm believer Fedor is the GOAT. And you can't just ignore the fact that Ryan Bader has beat him not once, but twice.
Easy.
But, yeah, easy both times. But I think you do have to acknowledge neither fight was a peak Fedor. This last fight was far from a peak Fedor. I mean, so I don't know, man. Look, 5 years from now, when we're talking about the accomplishments of Ryan Bader, maybe you do just look back and say, well, he beat Fedor twice, and you don't think, well, the last one especially was far from peak Fedor. And the first one, he was well past his prime as well, but I don't know. And that's the problem with a fight like this. No matter what Bader does, I don't think he gets helped from it all that much. This was Fedor going out, and he was either going out as a champ or going out the way he did. And that's really how a fight like this is set up when you got a guy who you know it's the last one going in, regardless of the outcome. Look, Bader did everything he needed to do and was supposed to do and did it with ease. But I think the deck was kind of against him as far as coming out of this better for it. Now, obviously, he won. That's better than losing. But does it really pad your resume that much to beat a far from his prime Fedor? I don't know, man. I kind of don't think so.
I just can't negate what Bader done when we want to give so much flowers and praise and shout this allure to the great Fedor, but Ryan Bader smashed him up twice. Him up easily twice. And if we were on the other side today and Fedor would have landed one wild uppercut when one of those hooks missed and knocked out Bader with one punch, we'd be talking about one more stamp on why the last emperor is the GOAT. I can't go both ways. There's a reason.
Not why only that, Micah,
we earned this title shot too.
Yeah, we'd also be talking about, well, one more for Fedor. He can't go out like that. We need a mega fight. Scott Coker needs to bring in Francis Ngannou. We need a third fight with Bader. We got to settle this. Fedor defying time. He's like the Tom Brady of MMA. He just gets better with it. So yeah, you're right. The narrative changes because one wild punch couldn't get landed, or something. What might have seemed small at the moment didn't occur that drastically changed that outcome. So yeah, when I talk about beating a well past his prime Fedor and all that, maybe that is a little short-sighted on my part, because we wouldn't have to go that far to have a much different narrative like you were just talking about that we'd be discussing today.
And it's not like when we're talking about the heavyweight division, we're talking about the deepest sea there is. And I guess we just had the conversation about Eblen. Where do you put Bader? I'm probably looking at him at least top five. We start saying Curtis Blaydes, Sergey Pavlich, Jones, Miocic, and gone. You throw in Ngannou, okay. Bader's probably top six heavyweight right now in the world. I'm not sure if he doesn't beat Alexander Volkov. Probably be a good fight with Sergey Spivak. We'll get into what he did this weekend, but I'm sure he could beat Jiunior Rozenstruik, Derek Lewis, and Marcin Tybura from what we've seen out of them. So I think what we don't know what to say about Bader, he probably is like top six in the world right now. Maybe what, top seven if you really feel somebody from one championship. Got to give Anatoly Malkin his credit. That dude is a beast.
I'd have him just outside the top five. I don't think he's far. I would agree with you. Let's see. If you're talking UFC, I'd have Jones ahead of him. I'd have Miocic ahead of him. I'd have Gon ahead of him. We'll throw in Ganu in there as well. So that's four. I think those we could agree on. Now, if you want to get into Pavlovich, I'd probably have him ahead of Blades. I don't know that I'd I don't know that I'd have him ahead of Tai Tuivasa.
Those are some good matchups. Once we get to Blades, sure, to Tuivasa, but you definitely see where I'm talking about. You throw in the one championship heavyweight. Ryan Bader is a credentialed heavyweight, and we should respect that he's building really this legacy, having been a two-division Bellator champion and now being highly successful at heavyweight.
What do you make of the disclosed pay? And I know that got a lot of play earlier this week from a lot of people on social media. Oh my God, Bader only made $100,000 or $150,000 for the fight. Easy. Pump the brakes. The key thing to keep in mind there, disclosed pay. And much like UFC, there might be contracts, things you pay guys, but then you also kind of pay guys what you want to pay them as well. I think it's pretty safe that Fedor and Bader both made considerably more than the disclosed pay that was released by the Athletic Commission.
I feel like it's almost insulting to the fans, to the media, and it's one more spit in all of our faces, even from the fighters, Echelon, that we shouldn't care about fighter pay. You can't really get behind one side of the argument or the other, especially when you're, okay, yeah, this is the pay that they're allocating that we're showing the commission. We're sure they all got paid a lot more on the back end, and these are the kind of numbers that fans and media want to use as ammunition to try to help fighters in this fight. You don't help us or yourselves when you're a willing party. And no, let's just, keep it in the closet and keep these numbers hidden.
There is another thing, Mike, that needs to be taken into account here, and I almost hate to have this discussion again because it seems like a tired argument, a tired discussion. But funny thing about MMA, it seems like the same old, the tired arguments are the ones that get the most play because nothing ever gets settled with it. And it's, was in the news a lot with the Francis Ngannou situation with UFC because it was something he wanted. But the disclosed pay versus actual pay aside for a moment, because we know that the top of that card got paid more than what was disclosed. Bellator fighters do have the option of having other money-making opportunities that aren't afforded to, say, UFC fighters. And of course, I'm talking about in-cage, in-octagon sponsorships. And look, if you're lower on the card, you're probably not making a ton off of that, but you're getting something. But it's probably safe to say that Bader and Fedor probably did okay with the logos on their trunks, the sponsorships, the banners behind them. I'm guessing those two guys, they probably did all right on their sponsorships.
Well, I'm telling you, Vader used the Force to get all the money he wanted out of his sponsors, Disney and them. But Bader probably at least made a pretty penny. Fedor Emelianenko, I wasn't even sure if he had a banner, and I thought his trunks were totally plain, just represented by Team Fedor.
I think it was
Team Fedor. I ain't even trying to talk about where else or who else.
Well, I don't want to get into them. I don't want to get into Fedor's possible sponsors, if you will, and things like that, because I just don't. For safety reasons, right? But yeah, and again, I think that also gets overhyped. I think it's worth bringing up here, but I think, and look, some guys, and if it was afforded to UFC fighters, some guys could make bank, but I'd be willing to bet by and large, most guys probably would not make a ton if they were able to sell sponsorships on their gear, have a banner behind them in the octagon and things like that. I don't know where you come down on that, but I think that probably gets overplayed quite a bit sometimes.
Okay, well, just looking through some photos real quick, we're doing this. I didn't think this would be a topic today. I don't know why. Ryan Bader at least had three sponsors on his shorts. Three sponsors, Primetime, CBS, right there. Aren't those $100,000 spots? Aren't those $50,000 spots on his trunk? So I'm thinking he probably made a good bit of money. Just looking at Sabah Humasi, who lost to Brandon Ward. He looks to have about three different sponsors on his trunks. You look on the prelims, and just the first prelim fighter that popped up in the photos I'm scrolling through, Henley Corrales looks to have about five different sponsors on his trunks if you include the shorts company that he's wearing. So I don't know if it gets overblown or not, but if you're getting two, three, four, five companies to give you money, it's another revenue source.
Sure.
Now, if we do want to talk about the funds that Bellator and the numbers that they did provide to the commission, they were quite staggering. If you look across the board, I think the smallest fighter on there got like 18,000, and that was a loser. So he would have got 36,000 with a win bonus. That is a lot of money for Bellator, a company that we've nailed for giving $1,000 and $1,000 to show a win, which is ridiculous when you're Bellator. This is a show where they busted out the big bucks, where you saw multiple fighters getting $70,000, $100,000. This night, Bellator paid out. And you saw a lot of fighters, as we talk about sponsors, you saw all the Team Fedor fighters. They obviously have their private, personal liquidation. Alejandra Lora didn't wear any sponsors. Ali Islam didn't have any sponsors. I don't know if it's just a trend that it seemed to be more that the foreign fighters didn't have any sponsors on their shorts, but the American fighters, it looked like we said, quite a few of them did take advantage of this with a couple.
Oh, no doubt about that. But the point I was trying to make, and I probably did a poor job of it, and you mentioned Corrales on the prelims, it looked like he had about five sponsors. You think he got as much for those five sponsors as Bader got for one of his?
No, but still, if he got half that,
true,
that would still mean that he's getting like the maximum money you're ever going to get from them.
And look, don't get me wrong. I understand why fighters want the ability to go out and get sponsors. I get it. And something's always better than nothing. Again, maybe I did a poor job. The point I was trying to make, I think a lot of times we overestimate how much they're getting. Like you mentioned, one of his, Corrales's was his short sponsor. Wouldn't be surprised if all he got from them was the gear. Hey, make sure our logo's on. Hey, look, maybe not. I could be wrong on that. But the only point was, I don't think it's quite the gravy train for everybody that a lot of fans think it is. Certainly, the higher up the card you are, it can be quite the little gravy train. But I don't know that everybody is getting rich. Now, again, if you're talking about making sure you have enough money to pay for your fight camp, pocket a little bit, and maybe, you know, store away a little bit for the future. Look, everything helps. And I'm not shitting on sponsorship money. I just don't think it's quite as much for all the fighters that some people think it is.
It may not be as much, but either way, it's more than zero is the point.
And that's always good.
It's more than you're given if you're not allowed to bring those sponsorships in. And like you said, there is a difference for each fighter, because there is a difference for Ryan Bader, and there is a difference for Isaiah Okita, who is on the prelims. If Isaiah doesn't sponsor any companies, he's still a growing entity that nobody knows of. When Francis Ngannou, when Ryan Bader are not able at the peak of their career and powers to do it, that's kind of the difference. Yeah. That's what we're talking about. For Ryan Bader, I don't even see photos of Johnny Eblen. That dude's trunks were covered in sponsors. He had at least five or six. For the middleweight champion of the world, who is 12-0 heading into that fight, I'm pretty sure that those sponsorships and the whole night in general was life-changing money for him in that moment. So it can be blown out of proportion, but I think even $200 or $300 for a fighter who's scraping by really is life-saving money. So then again, I think I go the other way. It's not overblown because probably these people deserve and need every dollar they make.
Well, now look, that I 100% agree with you on. Let me ask you this, Mike. Bellator, kind of rare for them. They'll be back in action in a couple of weeks. I'm curious. We enjoyed the fights themselves. We differed a little on the overall presentation. Do you think Bellator benefits from that card being on CBS? I guess what I'm trying to ask, can they build off of that heading into February 25th and beyond? Or would there have been no difference if it had been on Showtime like the other Bellator cards are? What was there a benefit for Bellator being on CBS this past week, that not just for the one night, but that they can build on for the rest of this year?
Okay, so you watched the fight live in real time, right?
Yep.
How much of that promotional window time that they used with the vignettes and whatnot did they use to focus on February 25th?
February 25th specifically, off the top of my head, I don't remember. I know they did a lot of stuff for the Grand Prix. They did spend some time on that card. Could they have done more? Yeah, probably.
I think I remember in my fast forwarding, because I was about watching the fights. I'm going to watch all the fights regardless. I don't need the promotional vehicle. I wasn't thinking in that mindset.
Right.
I do remember at least one time when they pulled away from the desk. I do remember seeing the Amoslov footage of him taking his championship belt from out of the rubble from his blown up home there in the Ukraine. So I do remember also seeing Logan Storley at his gym here in America. I feel like they could have done more. I feel like they could have pumped that fight and that event up a little bit more throughout the night to encourage fans where to find them next if they like the product. I feel like you and me both looked at this as an infomercial. This needed to be Bellator's best foot forward. And while it was a great foot forward, I feel like Fedor, as I thought he would, overshadowed the night, and the night was more focused around the Fedor retirement ceremony. I can understand live. I can understand a lot of the promotional vehicle being that way. But even every time a fight ended, the broadcast team, the production team, everyone was reminding you of Fedor. And I don't know if that did enough to introduce a new audience or even a returning MMA audience that you were trying to captivate because of Fedor and the free opportunity to say, hey, Showtime is where you can find this great upstart MMA promotion. I feel like they could have done more in that respect.
I think you can look back and always say we could have done more, we should have done more. But I 100% agree with you here. I think Bellator missed out on an opportunity here with a lot of eyeballs they wouldn't normally have on their product. I mean, look, let's be honest. Even, I don't want to say a casual MMA fan, but whatever is above casual but isn't hardcore, and maybe you check out at least parts of most UFC events, there's a really good chance that outside of a handful of fighters, you don't know a whole lot of these Bellator guys. And this was Bellator's opportunity to make sure that those fans, the ones who were tuning in, who maybe hadn't watched in a while because it's Fedor's last fight, the more casual fans who are tuning in because it's a big card, and, hey, I want to see Fedor one more time. You know, look, I thought they did a pretty good job with Eblen. But yeah, leading up to the next card. And like I said, I know they promoted the Grand Prix and things like that. But I think you could have done even more and not sacrificed any of the Fedor stuff, because obviously you had invested a lot in Fedor. You're trying to get your money's worth out of him as well. And it's a big night. I do get all that. But I think you could have still done all that, done it pretty much the way they did, and still done a better job of promoting current guys who are going to be there next week, guys that are going to be there in 3 months, in 6 months, and done a better job of getting people to care about them and want to tune back in a couple of weeks on Showtime or in a month or two on Showtime. I do think, I don't want to say they didn't do a good job. I think they could have done a better job.
Right. I feel like at some point also, well, the prelims are happening. If you're Scott Croker, you have to be leaving the arena, running to the back production truck and telling them during the main card, I don't care what it takes, we are finding 3 minutes to run the Chris Gonzalez knockout of Max Rosendorf, and we are running the Lorenz Larkin Muhammad Murkayev fight. We are running those two fights, and we are giving them the shine with their first round knockouts. We are showing how devastating these finishes were, and instead what we just got was Lorenz Larkin, the 3 second blimp of the knockout. You couldn't even show Chris Gonzalez's knockout. I feel like you had a ripe opportunity right there with a lot of talent on the prelims to say, hey guys, if you get a finish, we're going to at least run the highlight on the big show. We're going to make sure at least the highlight gets in. I mean, Larkin, we're putting him in elbow knockout of the year award contender. I put him there. Damn right. I did right away for this year's contenders. I felt like they could have done some more to hype up the guys that are still going to be on the roster tomorrow and the events later on this year.
Yep. You know, look, I keep bringing up the Grand Prix and that they did promote the Grand Prix, but more what I was actually thinking of, I think, was I did one thing I thought they did do a pretty good job with is they went down and highlighted all the champions and a couple of people who were next in line or contenders for said championships. Again, they did put forth an effort. I think it's always easy with the benefit of hindsight to look back and say, oh, we could have done this. We should have done that. Why didn't they do this? And certainly I think there's a lot of things we could point out that they could have done differently, but I don't necessarily, again, Mike, think they did a bad job. I think they realized what they needed to do, and on paper going into it, maybe they felt like they did enough or did as much as they could, given the amount of time that you needed to devote to the Fedor fight and all that. But yeah, again, with the benefit of hindsight and a golden opportunity, because even if you get another one, these opportunities to be on primetime, on network television on a Saturday night don't come across every day. And if you're Bellator, look, it's one thing if you're talking UFC and it's a card on Fight Pass or even ESPN or ESPN2, and you know next week we're going to be right back here on Plus or ESPN or ESPN2. So, you know, they still obviously want to promote and forward promote and get you to care about their product as well. But I think it was more important for Bellator here because these CBS opportunities don't come around very often. And yeah, they could have done better, I'm sure, but I don't think they did a terrible job either.
Are you ready for Linton Vassell versus Ryan Bader? Does that excite you? Do you feel like that is a magnet drawing main event? Because looking at the rankings, we just had Moldovsky, who's the number one ranked contender. Well, he lost the unification bout to Ryan Bader that he was trying to get the revenge for his mentor, Fedor. We take Fedor out of the rankings. Chet Congo just lost to Bader. Timothy Johnson lost to Fedor. Steve Mowry and Isaev earlier on the night fight to a draw. You have Daniel James in a main event upcoming, and I think that's against Marcelo Gome or Gökhan Sarkom. It's not a great illustrious outlook in the heavyweight division. Linton Vassell, at least, 4-fight win streak. Sergey Karatanov, Terrell Johnson. And yeah, he did beat Tim Johnson with the first round TKO. So it feels pretty clear and clean cut to me that Bellator desperately needs to make a big offer to Francis Ngannou.
It's amazing how we talk about how stacked the heavyweight division is in UFC. And then you just asking me, am I excited for the potential for Ryan Bader's next fight? No, I'm not. Does that mean I wouldn't watch? No, it does not mean that at all. But look, these things are cyclical and things change. They run their course. But if you're a heavyweight right now in MMA, UFC's the place to be. And I look, and I don't mean that as a knock on Bader, but for a guy who we were just talking about has beaten Fedor twice now, and we talk about legacy and things like that, there's not a lot currently on that Bellator roster that's going to help Ryan Bader further establish that legacy.
Not really. You even look at PFL, you got Ante Jalea and Bruno Capoloza. You look at PFL, you have Artem Bular, and you have Anatoly Malkin. I feel like Bellator now is the one place where you're like, the heavyweight division might be a one-man show. And I'm probably forgetting other names in those divisions. This might be one of the divisions where you look at it and say, the PFL might have an argument to a bit more depth than what we're getting out of Bellator in the heavyweights.
Micah, Bellator not the only game in town on Saturday night. We had UFC Fight Night. Well, maybe technically they were the only game on Saturday night because the main card on the East Coast for UFC did not get underway till technically Sunday morning at 1 a.m. Well, we had the prelims before that. I definitely want to talk about this main event because we got to. Where I want to start, though, just because I was so taken aback by it, I understand how we got there. I just don't agree with it. Duho Choi, Kyle Nelson, a draw? A draw? Even with a point, a draw? No!
A draw.
No!
Why is it not a draw?
Because Choi beat the shit out of him. But, to the point where Dana White gave him his win money.
But Nelson landed some good kicks and scored a takedown, and judging is to the eye of the judge holder.
And those judge holders really are blind. They're blind, Micah.
It was a draw. It was what it was. I can't say that. Yeah, I thought there was some issue with the scoring there, but I didn't think it was the biggest tragedy in the world watching it. Nelson had the takedown early. Yes, he gets reversed. He was kind of kicking Choi in the second round in between getting hit. And then we had the headbutt. Really, Choi, just got to blame yourself a little bit. You're the one with the foul. You lost a round in there. It was a bad mistake.
Well, fair enough. If you don't want to go to the judges' scorecards, finish the fight. But you're right. You're the one who committed the foul and open to interpretation, the intent, should the point be deducted, anything like that. If you don't commit the foul in the first place, you don't have to worry about the determination, should a point be deducted or not. So from that standpoint, I would agree with you. I thought Choi still won the fight. Was it a heinous miscarriage of justice? Probably not. But I thought Choi should have got the win. Look, for as much shit as Dana White gets, and at least some of it deserved, good on him for giving Choi his win money.
And real quick, as you said, let's give the UFC some flowers, some praise for five fights in 2 hours and 14 minutes.
Which is about what we got three fights in on the Bellator. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I had to throw that zinger real quick at you. The main events last about the same amount of time. Sergey Spivak just got on the inside, started dragging Derek Lewis to the ground. Lewis, to his credit, looked to be in much better shape, fought his way back to his feet, but couldn't stay there, and eventually was just exhausted and is pulled right into a arm triangle choke. Big ups to Sergey Spivak. Keep it rolling. First main event win. We can see that polar bear power, rugged strength. Got it done against Derek Lewis. Keep pushing Lewis down the rankings if he's not able to hang. That's not saying out of hate. That's just where his performance is going at this point. It's free falling. He's giving guys the opportunity to leapfrog him. And Dana White said he's keeping him. I know you like to hear that because you're a big fan of his, but this is rough to watch.
I can't help but think Derek Lewis was laying on the mat, getting pounded on Saturday night and thinking to himself, God damn, where's Dan Mergliotta to stop this thing when I need him? Because, you know, he had talked last week about not wanting Mergliotta to do his fights anymore because he has something against Derek Lewis or something, because he had a couple of early stoppages in his last fights. I love Derek Lewis. I'm not the least bit surprised that Dana says, hell yeah, we're keeping Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis is still a draw. People, now, is he a draw in? He equates massive pay-per-view buys? Maybe not. But people still care. You put him on a card, it's going to garner attention. That being said, you go back now, the last couple of fights for Derek Lewis, it's been a little hard to watch. And certainly Saturday night did nothing to remind anyone of how dominant Derek Lewis has been at times, and maybe still can be at times when he's on top of his game. It was not a good performance for him. He's now dropped three straight. Now, again, it's not like he's losing the scrubs, Tuivasa, Pavlovich, and then Spivak on Saturday. So it's not like he's losing to chumps, but these are guys he needs to be beating if he's looking to get back in the title picture, and he hasn't been able to get it done.
Free falling down the rankings. We know that Lewis had just fought Chris Daukaus, maybe Marcin Tybura, who's right below him, who just got a win. Maybe Blagoy Ivanov, who's the loser in that fight that we'll get to in a minute. Maybe those are some viable options for Derek Lewis. But this is a Lewis who, to most of our eyes, really did look much slimmer, like he had did the running, like he had did the work. And the technical deficiencies still shine through. If you're looking at Derek Lewis, this incredible personality, this charisma and magnetism, this ruthless power. But unfortunately, the technical deficiencies, the back injury, the physical ailments, it's all so much against him that it seems to be going against him against some of these young killers. Like, let's be honest, you look at number 14, Jailton Almeida, that would be the worst thing to happen to Derek Lewis, somebody that would shoot right in on his legs, take his back, choke him quick, take his number, let's switch and let that free fall continue. I like Derek Lewis, but you have to be very careful and selective about which fights you want to take from this point out to try to just tell Dana you want to make the funnest fight possible, aka who's ever going to stand and bang with me, bro? Let's not think about the title because there's too much grappling involved in that round.
That I agree with you. I don't know how much longer Derek Lewis wants to do this. I don't know his money situation. He strikes me as a guy who probably doesn't go out and spend stupid money on stupid things. I would be willing to bet you, Micah, he's probably well on his way to being set for life once he steps away from the sport. But my point is, I don't know that he's a guy that necessarily loves fighting or needs to fight to the point where we're going to see him into his 40s fighting. You're probably, best case scenario, only looking at another handful of fights in Derek Lewis's career. I would agree with you at this point, and on any given night, at any time, yeah, anything could happen in the octagon. But if I'm Derek Lewis, I'm looking for fun fights. I'm looking for favorable matchups. If something falls in my lap and you need a last-minute replacement for a heavyweight fight or something that could catapult me, that's one thing. But otherwise, yeah, just give me somebody who's going to stand there and swing with me, and I'll take my chances.
Now, on the other side, Sergey Spivak keeps moving up. Would you like to rather see him fight Alexander Volkov or Tom Aspinall? I feel like those are the two names wide open, just right above him in the rankings.
Yeah. I would agree with you on that. I think Spivak probably has much higher aspirations, but you don't want to rush it either. Walk before, you know, you crawl before you can walk, you walk before you can run. Either one of those, Volkov, Aspinall, makes a lot of sense.
All right. We had the co-main event,
yeah,
light heavyweight division, and I'm not saying that he's going to be Captain America. I'm not saying that. But to me, Devin Clark has the most Randy Couture-like style of any fighter in today's MMA game. Put you on the cage, beat you up, drag you down, beat you up. He's just trying to fight in that phone booth. He wants you to know what he had for dinner before we fought. His face is going to be that close to yours.
Oh, look at you waving the Devin Clark banner. Look, I thought it was a very impressive win for him. I was just looking at the latest rankings. Still not in the rankings. I thought it was a good step forward for him as well. I'm curious what they do with him next. But, you know, looking, going into that fight, and if you listen to the announcers, they were hyping up one of those guys really big during the walkouts and all that. And it wasn't Devin Clark. So does that make it even more of a statement win for Devin?
It's a veteran win, pulling it out, grinding it out, showing that you can get those wins, and showing that, well, he's moved up to Colorado now, the Elevation Fight Team, he's still evolving. Marcin Tybura, he gets the win. I thought it was 29-28. Beautiful jab in the second round. The takedowns in the third round. You mentioned the Duho Choi fight. Adam Fugit gets the TKO, elbows.
Real quick, Micah, does my guy, Blagoy, doesn't he look like a low-level member in Fedor's Russian organized crime team?
Which guy?
Blagoy. Ivanov.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like a really low level henchman or something.
Yes, he does. And it's one of those things you always remember Ivanov, because no matter where he fights, when he fights, they always bring up, and he beat Fedor in a grappling competition once. Yes. Yes, he did.
I assume he tripped and fell on top of Fedor and couldn't get up, but whatever.
Oh, the ruthlessness.
I'm sorry.
For those of you that listen to Pro Wrestling After Hours right here on the After Hour Podcast Network, you're used to our every show kind of Jonathan Gresham jokes. Is Blagoy Ivanov going to become Jonathan Gresham?
Maybe. He's just, let me be really clear. I'm not knocking the guy. He just does not have the look of what you think of when you think of a fighter. He looks more like somebody's dad. Like I mentioned, a low-level organized crime guy, the guy who goes around and collects protection money from the mom-and-pop stores. I
thought you were going to say he's the guy that owns the mom-and-pop store but throws everybody out before they're allowed to buy anything and then sends all the guys with the nice suits into the back room. When they entered, you're like, yeah, he's that store owner.
Or maybe. All right. I don't know that that's a higher spot up than mine, but maybe I can see that. If you were to sit down with a pencil and a piece of paper and sketch out what you think of when you think of a heavyweight fighter, and again, I'll even throw that in, heavyweight fighter, because not all those guys are going to be ripped to shreds, but you're not drawing anything that looks like Ivanov. You're just not, unless you're drawing a picture of your dad.
I'll give you that one. Now, we also had Road to UFC on this card. I thought that Ansel Jublee, he shined the takedowns, the control, the viciousness from the back, flattening out his opponent. Then also, Rina Nakamura, that fast knockout is on the list. You want to walk forward Kazuma like a crazy man who can take any kind of damage. You eat a straight left, you go to sleep. That knockout ends up being also another damn nominee for our upcoming year-end awards. And Sung Hoo Park also unbeaten, getting it done, the submission in the third round. I'm intriguing to see what this new wave of talent that the UFC bring from Asia has to offer. Great way to build up the market with this road to UFC that they did. And Tatsuya Taira started off the evening with an incredible submission, 13-0. We said that the flyweights were going to make a big impact this year, and I'm liking what he's doing.
I'll bring this up just because we just talked about this with Bellator, but the whole road to UFC thing. If you weren't following that on Fight Pass, you probably had no idea that that was happening on Saturday night. You probably had no idea who any of those fighters were. I'd have liked to have seen UFC do a little more to talk about how this came about, why it's happening, and why it's important. Again, we look, different situations for sure, but if we're going to talk about things Bellator could have done differently to promote going forward, obviously you care about these fighters. You care about guys coming from these countries. If you want the people here to care, you've got to tell them why they need to care. Don't leave it up to them just to figure out on their own why they should care. Point them in the right direction. Kind of turn them over here to the left. Go this way. This is what you want to see. This is what you want to care about. And here's why. I thought UFC came up a little short on that.
Does it matter that it was never the plan and they don't care if we know these fighters? That we're not the target audience? That road to UFC was built around the Asian market, and that the, and we can't put all the blame, but realistically, if the Korean Zombie doesn't have a shoulder injury, again, this fight is in Asia for the Asian market. It was even done at a time where the American audience was told to suck up. Now, I do understand that the UFC is an American company, and they should all the time be worrying about their pay-per-view audience that they care mostly about and pushing it towards us. But nothing on this card until they had to put Derek Lewis, Sergey Spivak in the main event to have a main event, which thankfully had fallen off of the earlier card it was booked on. If that doesn't happen, the UFC is really left holding a bag, because this card was never meant to be in this market.
And that is very true, and that is a fair point. But I would argue you should have still done a better job of explaining it, because while it may not be geared specifically for the American audience, this is still where your bread is buttered. And yes, you want interest in those countries. I totally get that. But if you're going to maximize it, if you're going to go all the way with it, if you want people to care after you do this little series, then you got to give them a reason why. And look, you're right. We're probably not talking about that at all. If this card had have taken place in South Korea, as was the original plan. Yeah. But if we're going to nitpick, you could have done a little bit better job giving me a reason to care about.
Oh, no, I agree.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. And look, in the grand scheme of things, probably not that big of a deal one way or the other, but I figured it was worth mentioning. We talked about it last week, Micah. It comes to fruition. Conor McGregor will be one of the coaches on the upcoming season of The Ultimate Fighter. Michael Chandler, your other coach, does that drum up enough interest for you to check out The Ultimate Fighter?
See, I wanted to start the segment so I could ask you the question, because I honestly thought that redo. You would be closer to giving this, like...
Well, this is so easy, Micah. We just redo it. No worry, dude. No worries. We'll pretend like none of that ever happened. Go ahead.
Oh, all right. Tough 31 officially is officially underway. We know the coaches. Conor McGregor will be one.
Conor McGregor, you say? Huh.
Yes.
Okay.
But instead of Tony Ferguson, as was rumored.
Right, right.
It's Michael Chandler.
Michael Chandler.
For you?
Ah. I guess. Look, maybe I'm jaded. The Ultimate Fighter itself, I just don't find interesting anymore. Look, I think it was great. Let's be honest. It saved the company once upon a time. I don't know. Look, Survivor's still around. I don't watch Survivor. Do you watch Survivor? To me, that's played out. Yeah. if you want to keep the Ultimate Fighter going, this was the thing to do. So I'm not hating on UFC for doing it. For a lot of people, I'll try to answer your question this way. Yeah, I think this is more than enough to get interest in it. Does it get me any more interested in it? If I'm being honest, not really, because I just feel like this is played. And with the Contender Series, I don't know how much you still need the Ultimate Fighter, right? Why go through all that when you could just get a fight on the Contender Series and win and earn your contract that way? That seems like a much easier route to the UFC to me.
I guess from a fan's perspective, I'm going to say that Mr. Excitement, Mr. Entertainment, we've never seen a dull moment out of Michael Chandler. Of course, he's the right choice for this opportunity. I can see that from the fans' perspective.
Yeah.
Fans just want to see Conor McGregor. Tony Ferguson would have been hyped. Let's be real about that. Stu would have been hyped. He'd have been on 10 the whole time. Woo! He would have been trying to play the game. He had been up. I think Michael Chandler is going to appreciate it in the same manner. He's going to play the game. Conor McGregor went on the dance floor, reached into his little coat pocket, and people are like, is that a handkerchief he's pulling out? It's red. No. Those are the same panties he left on the doorknob for Jose Aldo, and he's throwing them onto the dance floor. And as all those guys rush for them, like it's this, what it is, $1 million check, and they are fighting for it. You knew like two pit bulls with a steak that Ferguson and Chandler were going to fight for those panties, fight to be the perfect dance partner for Conor McGregor. They're going to make magic. They're going to make controversy. They're going to have high school as shenanigans and pranks to gimmick each other into something that will lead to a 5-minute fight.
I don't understand any of this, Micah. Your analogy is confusing me. Why has it got to be Conor McGregor's panties that we're fighting? Let me ask you this.
It's the red panty night, the whole thing with Jose Aldo.
No. I got it. I just didn't like the images it was putting in my head. I'll put it to you like this. I'd rather see Conor McGregor on season two of Power Slap than this. Which, by the way,
you mean actually doing something?
Yeah. Which gets me to my next point. Everybody seems in agreement. Chandler and McGregor are going to fight at the conclusion. The season's scheduled to wrap up in August. So somewhere late August, September, October, probably in that general area. There is one small problem, Micah. There is one little teeny tiny procedural thing that has to happen. Conor McGregor's got to get his ass back in the USADA testing protocols, and he hasn't done so yet. So even if he did it today, you're still, you could squeeze it in coinciding with the end of the season, but you got to get back in at some point. And USADA has reiterated that Conor's got to get back in the testing protocols in order to fight. He can coach, whatever. That's not a big deal, but you got to get back in the testing protocols. You got to be in it for 6 months. You got to have two clean tests. He should probably get on that at some point.
Well, if the drip is hot, there's nothing he can do about it, if you know what I'm saying. If it's gonna red light, if it's gonna red light the test, it's best to not step back in the pool. So Conor McGregor will re-enter the testing pool after the UFC and their bad of scientists have already concluded that he is once again clean of all the shit he poured into his system while he was gone, so that he is not breaking USADA rules officially. When he is clean enough to test, he will get back in a testing pool. But unfortunately, he's not clean enough. That's, you know, what we are all to perceive, because we can all understand he didn't leave because he was retired. He left to go do something that USADA would have batted an eye against. He left because he didn't want to have to drag USADA out to his movie set. It would have been too much on them to bother him on a movie set, so he couldn't trouble them. And now he just hasn't got back around to getting back in the pool. No, the pool would hurt his legacy, because he would test positive. He will be back when he is no longer positive.
But you don't agree to coach the season of The Ultimate Fighter and agree to fight Michael Chandler at the end of said season if you can't get approved by USADA. So, I mean,
well, isn't that more for the UFC to worry about? Because they're giving a contract to a fighter that they know can't fight for 6 months until he's in the pool and he hasn't even dipped the toe.
Yeah, well, and that gets me to my next question. We know he theoretically could apply for an exemption. To the best of my knowledge, Micah, and you might know this better than me, the last UFC fighter to get a similar exemption was Brock Lesnar at UFC 200. Maybe it's happened since then. I don't know that it has, though. We also know that Brock Lesnar tested positive after the fact. We also know that the aftermath of that led to Mark Hunt suing Lesnar and UFC and a bunch of other people over the whole ordeal. I can't imagine USADA would be all that excited about giving an exemption here to a Conor McGregor when I think it's pretty obvious. And look, he had the broken leg. He's trying to heal the injury. I'm not necessarily finding fault with what we think he all did, but I don't think anybody thinks it's a far reach to assume that Conor left the testing pool because he was doing things that would not fly in the testing pool in an effort to, A, heal and rehabilitate, but then, like you mentioned, doing the Roadhouse remake, bulking up a little bit for that as well. I can't imagine USADA would be jumping up and down to hand out an exemption. So, assuming that's not the case, would UFC take this somewhere where they could skirt USADA, which might be a workaround for this, but it's not going to do you any favors with your testing partner. It's also going to be a bad look. It's going to bring you scrutiny. Or are we just kind of stuck, I guess, for lack of a better term, waiting for Conor to feel like it's appropriate for him to step back into the USADA testing pool and go through the 6 months then?
Well, to make this all really simple, the last thing you said, yes. It's that last thing, and it's a yes. If we backtrack and go throughout all of it, and we want to analyze each question on its own, there's like four different questions in there. Are there USADA exemptions given? I believe so all the time. Are there USADA exemptions for UFC fighters? All the time. What do I mean? You have to be in the pool for 6 months before you can take a fight. Well, how does the UFC bring up any fighter from the LFA on 3 days' notice to fight then if they have to have 6 months in the pool?
Fair point.
There are obvious exemptions given all the time. Brock Lesnar, though, would be the highest level guy that was brought in and giving this exemption on a random one-off. Conor McGregor, though, falls into that third category of we all highly presume that he went to do something wrong, and you'd have to be living under a frickety rock to not know the biggest star in the sport broke his leg horrendously, had to go away for treatment, bulked up incredibly for a movie that's being promoted worldwide, and then wants a exemption out of a drug testing pool. That would just be flush USADA's existence and worthwhileness down the drain if you're just gonna look at a duck, test it for being a duck, and walk it right into a pond, and then saying not a duck here. That's how bad that would be with Conor McGregor. It's flashing it in front of everybody's eyes and coming back and saying whether it was, I just did it for a movie, I just did it for recovery. Will the UFC, and that's the thing is you said on the other part, could the UFC just go outside of USADA? They can't. Globally, USADA has the jurisdiction to follow UFC and the UFC fighters globally. So if the UFC wants to invest in whatever the guy is who's taking the space shuttles around the orbit real quick, if you want to have Conor McGregor do the first octagon fight in that ship, theoretically, I guess USADA doesn't have jurisdiction up there, but you should probably call it a contender series bout.
Elon Musk, is that who you were going for there? The guy with the spaceship?
Yeah, is that the guy that's offering the cheap, the couple $1,000 flights and back?
No, mainly where I was going with that was, and again, I think it brings up too many issues that it's not worth the effort, but if the fine folks in Saudi Arabia who love to throw money WWE's way to come over 2-3 times a year, they said, Dana, Dana. We want McGregor. I know you could sell out anywhere in America. We want you to come here. Here's stupid-ass money. We don't give a shit about USADA over here. Come over here, put on the fight. Our people will approve it. Theoretically, would that even be possible? Now, again, does it open up a whole another can of worms? I can't help but think it would. But if we'll just use Saudi Arabia. If they wanted to throw stupid-ass money at the UFC to put on McGregor Chandler over there, is that something UFC could and would even entertain if it meant skirting USADA?
If it meant effectively ending the USADA program fully. I think that that would probably necessitate blowing up their relationship and any... Basically, we don't want any accusations of gambling in the UFC. Well, let's just green light all the accusations of steroid use, yeah, running rampant when they physically push out the authority that they brought in. That's what you're saying right there. I understand the money. I understand the logistics. You're saying it would physically be possible. You'd have a better chance of just paying off USADA to stay away from Conor McGregor and hoping nobody ever found out than saying, no, we're going to go to a third world country where we just won't allow their testers in there so they can't have jurisdiction. That would change the narrative around the UFC in a whole different way.
Well, I already know the answer to this, but I'll ask you anyway. How important is it if you're UFC to continue that USADA relationship?
Well, because you've already said that they've made it a priority to give off this. What was it? The same thing with the gambling. You want to perpetuate the image that you care. You've already told us that you care. How can you say you don't now? That's like the UFC. If they didn't honor Black History Month, if they didn't honor equal rights, I think it would make waves within the people that acknowledge that they've done this year in and year out to turn about face and to say, we don't care now, would just either... You're the UFC, and you'd have to go on the offensive of attacking USADA, or you're going on a full about face of why now. Mark Rafter, in particular, would have to take the brunt of why do you believe that all these things should be legal that weren't previously? Because now you're just allowing a floodgate of stuff. Unless you, again, want to talk USADA and say, no, we're changing over to VADA or WADA, and you want to directly attack USADA, saying that they're failing you in their jurisdiction, that seems like it would be much crazier, though, to just say we're going to switch from one entity to another to get one fight and a lot of money.
I would agree, and I think you're also fighting a losing battle trying to besmirch the fine name of USADA. I mean, look, say what you want around, but look, they're generally recognized as the gold standard in that industry. And look, I agree with you, but I felt like I should ask the question because, yeah, you always have to wonder if the money's right. What are you willing to do? Again, at the end of the day, I think the cons would totally outweigh the pros in trying to do that. I think you may ask for that exemption, but I think you're also resigned to the fact that Conor needs to get his ass back in the protocols so we can start the clock on the 6 months.
Yeah. How much more likely are you now? Mm-hmm. Now, because we know it's Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler, how much more likely are you to devote your attention to the first episode?
Oh, I'll definitely at least check out the first episode. And where I go from there, we'll have to see. But again, look, and I'm not hating on this. I think this is the right move for UFC to make here. Like I said earlier, just for me personally, I think the Ultimate Fighter has outlived its shelf life. So you could do anything and put it like this. There's nothing else they could have done that would have made me any more interested than what they're doing now. Now you brought up Ferguson. If you want to look just for the sheer whacked out Tony Ferguson, what's he going to be like on any episode? Maybe a little bit, but look, let's be honest. McGregor's the draw here, right? You could not have gotten a bigger name, a bigger star. So, I mean, this was the UFC move, and hopefully for their sake, for a lot of people, it does drum up interest. it just doesn't for me because I've kind of soured on this whole concept.
Other news and notes this week from the UFC. We got fight announcements. Jamal Embers and Kushan Ashgabov have been announced for the February 18th UFC Vegas 69 card. Julio Arce has had to pull out. Cody Garbrandt is now facing Trevin Jones. That's bantamweights. And Ian Gary versus Song Kanon is a welterweight edition. Both of those are for the March 4th UFC 285. Mahmoud Muradov and Asipin Magomedov have been announced for the March 11th UFC fight night. Michael Chiesa versus Lee the Leech Jinglian is announced for UFC 287 April 8th. That one official this week announced for Miami, capitalize on that Jorge Masvidal in the co-main event. Max Holloway, Arnold Allen, that one announced for a headliner of the UFC fight night on April 15th. Brian Kelleher, Journey Newsome, that's bantamweights, and a women's featherweight matchup, Chelsea Chandler, Danielle Wolf, that one, those two for April 29th. Daniel Santos, Johnny Munoz at bantamweight, that one added to the May 6th card. We got PFL news. Their regular season will start in April, April 1st, April 7th, April 14th, the first 3 weeks, all 3 weeks, this one interesting, all 3 weeks going to take place from the Virgin Theater in Las Vegas. Sin City, get ready for a second resident. The PFL, not just sharing ESPN and ESPN Plus with the UFC, but also coming to Las Vegas.
And like you said, at the Virgin Hotels where UFC has a fight night in a couple of weeks.
March 11th, and then 3 weeks for the PFL. So that first week, April 1st, Brendan Loughnane, Marlon Moraes, your main event, co-main event, Robert Wilkinson, welcome in Thiago Santos to the PFL. You have heavyweight winner Ante Jalian in the second week taking on Jorgen De Castro, who's training now with Team John Bones Jones. Co-main event is Larissa Pacheco against the former Bellator champion, Juliana Budd. Your third week, OAM, Olivia Aubin-Mercier, Shane Burgos at lightweight. Your main event, Burgos for the season, going to go up to 155. Your co-main event, Sidibou C, the last year's welterweight winner, taking on Jara Ali, a former Brave champion. That's your co-main event. And, of course, you know me. I got news from the LFA. LFA 156 announced for Sioux Falls, South Dakota, April 14th. And LFA 157, that's going to be April 21st, Prior Lake, Minnesota.
Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. Dude, I hope to God you're secretly on the LFA payroll. I hope to God you are. I would feel bad for you if you just randomly devote this much time to LFA. There's got to be a payoff here, Micah. Come clean, damn it. Come clean. No? All right. You just sit there with that shit-eating grin on your face. I think you answered the question, sir. Hey, and good for you. Good for you. Hey, Micah, in all seriousness, we got some contract news. Kevin Lee has re-signed with UFC. First of all, why? And second of all, does this mean Eagle FC is kaput?
I'm guessing it's Kaputsky for Eagle FC. Haven't heard anything from Ray Borg. He was supposed to be fighting for the Eagle FC bantamweight title, I thought, around the corner. We're seeing guys like Kevin Lee, Diego Sanchez leave the company. Their heavyweight champion, Kunyan Riviev, has signed with Bellator, actually. PFL, excuse me. Rudy signed with the PFL. So you're looking at some of the names that they were established are starting to surface out. Habib, as now I understand it, he just didn't retire from coaching. He retired from promoting. I think he fully stepped away from MMA. I think we are witnessing, yes, the full dissolution of the American branch of Eagle FC, that the subsidiary, everything they still had going on in Dagestan and Russia, that was obviously able to run without Khabib's day-to-day oversight. I think that's the fate of Eagle FC. Kevin Lee back to the UFC. I'm not sure why one win over Diego Sanchez after nearly 2 years away is the perfect recipe, but who knows? Maybe looking at the situation, it was more Kevin Lee in the UFC just didn't see eye to eye on his value, and maybe those numbers have come more in line. That's what I'm gathering from this one.
Speaking of numbers coming in line, Sean O'Malley has signed a new 8-fight deal with UFC. O'Malley says he's very happy with this contract. So I'm guessing it's safe to say that Sean O'Malley monetarily is getting what he was looking for from UFC, or at least close to it.
That's what we're getting, and we've seen it live and in person. Sean O'Malley is a star. The fans love him. The younger generation is drawn to him. And I compare it to who's going to be the next Conor, because we look at the next Conor, and it seemed like Paddy Pimblett, Sean O'Malley, those are the two outgoing personalities
right.
that were attractive to the larger audience. And there's just no comparing that Sean O'Malley is a much bigger draw than Paddy Pimblett. I think it was the right move by the UFC to lock him down. I think we still have a lot to learn about the potential of Sean O'Malley, but on a cusp of a title fight, this was the right move, and more power to him if he's happy with the payday.
No, look, I'm very happy for him. I don't think you can deny his popularity. Will he be able to take it to the next level and win a title in UFC? I think it's way too early to say one way or the other, but here's what I would say. He's got his whole career ahead of him. He's still a very young man. He's still developing. I think we've seen glimpses of what he can be, and he's already very good now. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to make it sound like he's just some prospect, because he's far from that at this point, but he is a guy who's still developing, who's still rounding out as a fighter. I don't want to say the sky's the limit, but I think the potential for a really, really high ceiling is definitely there for Sean O'Malley, and he's gotten his new contract with UFC. Now he's got to go out and prove it in the octagon.
This weekend, a lot to prove in the octagon. It's UFC 284 as the promotion returns to Australia. The lightweight world title is on the line. And we have something that I don't know if many of us thought we'd ever get to see. This is number one against number two in the pound for pound rankings, whether it was a point where those two fighters in those spots were too far apart in weight. For other political reasons, the fight didn't come together. Maybe they were teammates or friendly. We get number one against number two in the world. This is going to be something special.
I am so looking forward to this. Champ versus champ. Can Volkanovski do it? Can he move up in weight? Can the difference in size, can he overcome that? Can he still pack the punch at lightweight? I wouldn't count him out against anybody. I don't know that I'm feeling this for him, though.
Islam Makhachev, 15 finishes.
Yeah.
11 of them are submissions, 4 knockouts, 5 in a row finishes. 11 wins outside of Charles Oliveira, though. This is the steepest competition that Makhachev has went against. Look at the names. I'm not trying to be disrespectful in any light, but Bobby Green is the guy that Islam got past to get this title shot. Dan Hooker was on short notice. Thiago Moises isn't ranked. Drew Dober has obvious deficiencies. On the other side, Alexander Volkanovski, this 21-fight win streak. You're looking at someone that has more knockout power or more knockouts on his resume with the 12 knockouts and 3 submissions than Islam. Somebody that strikes differently, has puts together patterns to confuse his opponents, and he just came off of a streak that includes 3 wins over Max Holloway, beating Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo, Brian Ortega, Chan Sung Jung, and he made Jung and Ortega world-class fighters look like they did not deserve to be in the octagon. I know moving up in weight should make a big difference, and we want to say all these make a big difference. When Izzy moved up from middleweight to light heavyweight, though, we were talking about 20 pounds. John Jones is putting on 30 pounds going up from light heavyweight to heavyweight. Volkanovski's only going up 10 pounds. Yes, DJ never captured the bantamweight title. Jose Aldo had success dropping, though, from featherweight to bantamweight. If you just look at the measurements, I'm going to understand Islam is much bigger, much stronger, thicker than Max Holloway. But he's only an inch taller. Volkanovski actually has an inch reach advantage in this fight. He's 4 inches shorter. It's going to be a bad day for Volkanovski if he's put on his back. It's that way for anyone who goes against Islam. It's a matter of getting there, and it's a matter of testing Islam. Do we believe he could overcome Volkanovski? Yeah, but I don't want to doubt that Volkanovski could take Islam out of his element and make him work harder than he ever has, make those takedowns too hard to where this becomes a striking bout later as the fight goes on. That could make this very interesting on the scorecards. If there's an early finish, I feel like it is Mahashev getting a submission, proving to just be technically more powerful and superior. But I can't just overwhelmingly think that Volkanovski, who has fought the higher level of competition, is going to be that overwhelmed in this scenario.
I think the size could overwhelm him a bit. And look, maybe not, but I feel a lot better about Islam going into this. Now, look, I think you make some good points, and there's no doubt who's fought the better competition. Let me drop down for a second, because this can tie back in if we want to keep talking about the main event. But the co-main event, interim title fight for the featherweight title, the belt Volkanovski currently holds, Yair Rodriguez, Josh Emmett. Let's say Volkanovski does beat Islam. Do we quietly remove the interim tag from the winner of Yair, Josh Emmett, and Volk stays up at lightweight? Or regardless of what he does, do you think we will see him go back down and fight again at featherweight?
I don't know, but there's a reason why they're making Max Holloway versus Arnold Allen as the main event in April, because the UFC wants to be prepared just in case Volkanovski never comes back to the division. Think about this. Islam Mahashev has had 3 different fights where he was hit 13 times, 13 landed strikes. One fight, the most that he's ever been hit in a fight was against Charles Oliveira, 19 landed strikes. Alexander Volkanovski, in his entire UFC tenure, the smallest strike differential that he has had in a fight is a plus 18.
Yeah.
No one has got closer than plus 18 or negative 18 losing to Volkanovski. He's outdone 18, if not more. We're talking about hundreds in some of these cases. We know that Volkanovski can swim with deep water. We don't know what Mahashev looks like if the fight gets there. Is he that dominant that he is undeniable? Or is this the hardest lesson to learn against a guy who has been there and done that? It is an intriguing set of questions to me in that main event. In the co-main event,
yeah.
If I said to you, this everything just speaks to clear-cut Josh Emmett to win this fight, am I wrong?
Yes.
Why?
Because Yair Rodriguez is going to tear him up. That's why.
What victory gives you that confidence on Yair Rodriguez? Because as I look back at it, I'm a little more scared of Yair Rodriguez's record. He's coming off of Brian Ortega popping that shoulder up. 2 years ago, he beat Jeremy Stephens. Where the fuck is Jeremy Stephens today? I love you, Jeremy Stephens. We didn't even talk about that incredible boxing card I was sharing yesterday. Roy Jones Jr. is going to box Anthony Pettis. Jose Aldo is going to box Jeremy Stephens. But that's where Jeremy Stephens is in his career. He's talking about boxing another retired UFC vet. And those are the two most recent wins that Yair Rodriguez has. That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about that we haven't seen him fight in 3 years.
Fair point. I see, and maybe silly me, I just look back to that Holloway fight. And yeah, he came up on the short end of that, but that was a hell of a fight. And I think if Yair had been in there against anybody else, Micah, he's winning that fight. Now, does he have it in him to do that again if he needs to? I think he does. I could be wrong on that. I think we find out on Saturday.
You zoom out. Got beat up by Chan Sung Jung. Won on a Hail Mary. No contest with Stevens.
Yeah.
The win over Stevens. Ridiculous amount of damage taken against Holloway. We don't know how that Ortega fight was going to play out, and that is a dangerous thing because we don't know if he's corrected his holes, how he hasn't. We know that he's coming in fresh, where we do know that Josh Emmett had some surgeries, had to have his knee repaired. But Josh Emmett beating Calvin Kattar, Dan Ige, Shane Burgos, Mirsad Bektic, Michael Johnson seems to have the more continuous sustained momentum, at least to me. And I don't think that we can undersell what it was to go five rounds also with a Calvin Kattar. You talk about the rub that Yair got from losing to Max. We thought Kattar got that same rub, that he came in with that same echelon and Emmett was able to get past him. Emmett hits harder. He's the better wrestler. Yair Rodriguez is the more dynamic, spectacular. If something's going to happen out of nowhere, it's going to be Rodriguez pulling it off. But I just looked at, am I missing something that maybe he is that good, but there's just not enough evidence for me to be sure that Rodriguez has everything to triumph over Emmett, where I don't want to question either one of these guys' next level toughness.
And that's the thing. I think he is that good. However, I will acknowledge you make a really good point. And look, for all we know, that Holloway fight took something out of Yair Rodriguez that he ain't getting back. Yeah, he had the Ortega fight after that. We know that ended very early with the shoulder injury to Ortega. Like you said, we don't know how that would have played out. It is possible that if you're looking at this and you think Yair Rodriguez is going to win, that you're doing this more on hope and speculation than actual hard evidence, if you will, to back it up. But point being, you didn't change my mind, but I think you made a whole lot of really good points. And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I'm not changing my mind.
I absolutely love those two title fights,
yeah.
But there are two more fights on this card that I love equally as much. That feature fight, JDM, Jack Della Maddalena versus Randy Brown. This is stupid good. 13 fight win streak, 3 straight knockouts in the UFC, works behind the jab, rips to the body, beat a wrestler in his second outing. JDM looks to have the goods, and Randy Brown is this imposing figure at 170 pounds. Stupid big size. We all waited to see his promise come to fruition, and it has with a 4-fight win streak, beating names like Oliveira, Gooden, Chaos Williams, and Trinaldo. This one is going to be spectacular. How does JDM get past the size of Brown? Can Brown handle the technical boxing that JDM is going to bring towards it? That is probably like as good of a non-title fight as you could bring to this card.
That's going to be so sneaky good because everybody's focused on that co-main, that main event. This one might steal the show.
Now, I want to mention one other one. I didn't want to go through every fight on the card. I mean, do we expect Justin Toffa versus Parker Porter to be sloppy good fun? Somebody's getting knocked out there.
How can you not break that one down? Parker Porter, man, come on. Justin
Every
Toffa.
Time I want to think that the guy's not going to win, he pulls it out.
Yeah.
Has some deficiencies with the grappling, but if you're not a surefire prospect, he can drag you into the deep waters. Yeah. Justin Toffa hasn't fought in 14 months. He is a hard-hitting kickboxer. Who knows what that one's going to be? Jimmy Crute back against the wall. He's only 2-3 in his last fight. He takes on Alonzo Menafield, who has 10 knockouts, 10 first-round finishes, back-to-back knockouts. Menafield, now in his 30s, really looks to be putting everything together. I love Tyson Pedro, another light heavyweight bout there. Back-to-back knockout wins now that he's healthy. Modestus Bukauskas is coming back to the UFC after back-to-back knockout or back-to-back wins, won a Cage Warrior title. Probably bad news, though, coming back on the short notice against Pedro. That's going to be fun. The other fight I wanted to highlight, Josh Clibio versus Melson Badarsani. That one is going to be a banger at 145 pounds.
Yeah.
Josh Clibio versus Melson Badarsani. Clibio, back-to-back decision wins. He has 5 knockouts overall. Loves to bang it out. Muay Thai striking. Will Melsick, 7-fight win streak, 5 knockouts, beat Colin Anglin and Machida Karate black belt Bruno Souza so far in his 2 outings? I think that one could be low-key fight of the night worthy. On the early prelims, also at 145 pounds, Jack Jenkins makes his UFC debut on a 7-fight win streak. 5 of those are finishes. He has a TKO by leg kicks. You know that gets me interested when a prospect can finish a fight with leg kicks. And Don Shanice. Shanice, 8 wins by knockout. Yes, we've seen him once. He lost his UFC debut to Sadiq Youssef. But when you're willing to fight Sadiq Youssef on a week's notice, I'm interested to see what you can do in your second time around. Elvis Brenner, who makes his debut way down on the first fight of the card against Zubar Zuglodalov. This one's interesting. He has 10 submissions, 7 of them by armbar. Don't know if he gets the fight on the ground here, but I just found that stat to be outrageous. Blake Binder comes in with a 4-fight win streak. I don't want to go through every fight, but I really feel like there is a lot to get excited about on these prelims.
No doubt about it. And look, this is going to be a really fun card. I'm looking forward to this. Should be a lot of fun. We could see a champ again. We'll just have to see how that plays out. But one way or the other, I think we're in line for a good night of fights. Anything else we need to hit on before we take off?
Yeah, you know, one more time, I'm going to mention LFA has a show this weekend. LFA 152, Shawnee, Oklahoma. Brazil's Renato Valinete and Russia's Osmat Boykanov in the main event. So 2 of the world's top prospects, not to mention a guy that I've got to interview many a times, didn't get around to doing it this fight due to some wild stuff for me last week. Manny Moreau is in the co-main event against William Starks. And DeMario Dennis, big brother of Myron Dennis, UFC vet, is there in the co-main event against prospect Trevor Wallace.
I don't know what they're paying you under the table. I don't even want to cut. I'm just glad we can use this platform to help you get that little money under the table that you get from LFA. That's awesome.
And the American debut of Brave, former Brave champion, Magomed Istaraev. Almost missed that one. Yes, that under the table money comes each time I mention another prospect cha-ching, as well.
Cha-ching, cha-ching. Micah, tell everybody how they can keep up with you. Besides LFA.com.
I'm actually not posted there. They should probably put up the interviews I do.
They should.
You know, I'm going to have one coming for LFA 153. Yes. That's going up this week, so y'all check that out. CagedMinds.com. It's Caged Minds Combat Sports News on Facebook. CagedMinds_CSN on Instagram. At CagedMindsMMA on Twitter. Oh, yeah, and the YouTube is CagedMindsMMA Show.
You can get the show on Twitter at MMA After Hours. You can find me at Real Mike Carlisle. Email us, MMAAfterHours@gmail.com. We will talk to you next week for another episode of MMA After Hours here on the After Hours Podcast Network.
Love combat sports? I have a website for you, cageminds.com. That's CageMinds.com. Fight news from around the world, in-depth interviews, live event coverage. Covering combat sports for over a decade. Established in April 2011. That's CageMinds.com.